All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I'm Kevin Colley, and you're watching Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
Let's go.
Deep. All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Rigorelia?
How you making out?
Doing wonderful today.
Yeah?
How are you, buddy?
Looking pretty chipper.
Oh, Debo came in. He's telling jokes, knees slapping.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, this guy's on fire today. Got me in a good mood.
Yeah, you weren't dipping into the devil's dandruff? Or?
No, devil's dandruff. I'll tell you what. A little bump, Fro here. Jesus, that's 2 weeks in a row. Fro came
out. Yeah, right?
You got to send him a clip.
Oh, yeah.
No, there's no devil's dandruff in the house today. Baller said, nope.
No, not today.
Dandruff. Where'd you get that from? Oh, I never heard it. It turns all your bad feelings into good ones, you know? Oh, God. I'll tell you what. Well, Riggs, I can tell you one thing. We could have used some devil's dandruff on Sunday night because we got shit kicked. Appreciate you bailing on the boys again. That's about fucking 12 games in a row you've missed, I think.
Well, it's a new league. It's a new season.
So it only counts for one.
It only counts for one. I'll be at the next one Sunday.
We dropped a tough one there. Hedgehog pulled a fucking Roman Czech manic and fucking quit. Fucking scared the ice like 2 minutes
ago. And then he's back.
He goes, I'm done. Yeah. I said, you're not done, Hedge. And he's like, I messaged him and I'm like, you're not done. And he's like, dude, I'm terrible. I went, you were terrible the other day. Yeah, but you're not done. And he's like, okay.
So he left the game, like, was still game?
We had pulled the goalie. And I think we may have scored. No, we didn't score on it, but we scored right before that. And then we pulled him and then they scored. And
he just skated off.
Like,
all
right. Two to go. Guys are like, run the clock. I'm like, we got time, guys. I was still jacked from the Devil's Dandy. Oh, I thought there was plenty of time to get five
down
goals.
Down 5-1. Yeah.
To win it. But anyway, next week. This week.
Next week. Yeah, this week.
We'll
see Sunday.
Show up. Yeah.
Well, I'll be there.
Okay. Yeah, right. Hey, congratulations to our boy Fridge.
Oh, Fridgey. Yeah, it's an amazing job for him. I mean, it's right in his wheelhouse of where he needs to be. He's a funny ass dude.
Yeah.
I think, he's got some experience with this. He's done it with the Phantoms back in the day. And he's one of those guys. You just need a camera to follow him around, man. He is funny.
You could just let him be him, like, totally, because the ratings would go through the roof. But, you know, it's some. Well, not that he's not professional, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, he's so funny. But hopefully, you know, that he lets that come out with what he's doing because he's a funny human.
Yeah, he is. I think he will. It's kind of like anything else, right? You just got to get some reps in.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's got to do the professional part of it, but I think what's going to make him great at it is letting Fridge be Fridge, right?
Yes, and just for sure
saying it how it is. Well, obviously with some boundaries, because you know, but nonetheless, I think he's gonna do great at it. So I know how happy he was. I spoke to him the day he got the job there and he was pumped. So
good for
I wish him
man.
The best.
Yeah,
he'll fill that role very nicely. So
yeah, that's awesome. Congrats, Fridge.
Yeah.
What would you do if you're playing over in Czech Republic and Jake Voracek's an assistant coach?
Oh, man.
Like, I never thought this would happen. Is he doing the power play? Because Jogs runs the power play. Maybe. But Jake Voracek was named assistant coach with Jogs.
PK? Well, he'd be helping Jogs at the power play, I'm sure, throwing his 2 cents in there. But, I think looking over your shoulder and seeing that big red burly beard, hopefully he keeps that bad boy on the bench.
No.
No?
He needs to trim. He needs to be profesh.
Well, that's nothing not professional about having a beard. Is there?
I mean, yeah, you know, I guess not.
Well, I think he rocks it well. I think having a character like that on the bench was certainly...
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure all the players look up to him, too.
Oh, of course. Yeah, he's a legend there.
He's a legend there. He's obviously a really good hockey player. And I just hate to see that he didn't get to finish out.
Yeah, it's a shame how it went down, yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't take his clubs and just go to Arizona, at least to play golf and get treated.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, he should have.
But congrats to Jake.
Yeah,
That's great pretty transition cool. Keeps him at the rink, right?
You're exactly like, right. What else are you gonna do?
Yeah, we all miss
keep him out of trouble. Keep him out of the pub.
Well, I don't know if that's gonna work.
Yeah, right.
I think he's gonna have more time
for that. Yeah,
he's
right.
Gonna have more time for that. But yeah. So you've been watching any preseason hockey?
Just the highlights, Nas.
Yeah, I know. Last night, the Vegas LA game, Mark Stone was hit by Hayden Hodgson and crushed. Great hit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, clean hit.
Yep.
And shit went a little haywire. No problem with that, right?
No.
But the post-game comments.
Stick together. That's probably the last time I'll ever play against that guy. Not really much of a player, so.
I wasn't a huge fan of that from a guy that once played in the league that was a late draft pick who had to battle to make it. This kid's trying to make the fucking team.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of brutal of Stone to kind of like say he's a terrible player, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. You're a player, so I'd rather get your
thoughts.
Well,
I think it was a little bit unnecessary. I mean, it was, in my opinion, a clean hit, right? Guy reversed the puck. Stone picks it up. Guy's in the forecheck, finishes it, and crushes him. I mean, I like the response from the team and Stone in the moment on the play. It was exactly what you'd expect. But to me, it's dead there. Like, you know, like it's a preseason game. Like, you know, to go out and make comments like that. But, you know, he's pissed off and emotions get the better of guys, but I think, you know, I think it was unnecessary, but you know, obviously he was still heated, so he wanted to voice his opinion.
He did. He voiced it. He did. I thought it was kind of shitty for,
yeah, it doesn't seem like it's part of his, you know, really, yeah, his character to be doing that, but
I don't know him well, but I didn't think, you know, are you that mad about the hit? Like, you're going to get hit.
You're going to get hit.
You're going to get hit again, too.
That's it. LA might just dress him every game.
That would be, that would be sick.
Get him to run Stoney.
Yeah. Follow him around.
Follow him around.
I do that a lot.
Your good boy, strategy.
It is. Your boy Vasilevskiy's out 2 months.
It's a big one.
What does Tampa do there? Better call the Moose.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. They have to. I don't know what they have in their system.
They have like
there,
five goalies there at camp. So. But yeah, that's a pretty big blow for that team.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, obviously. 2 months, so see what happens there.
Yeah, yeah, wish them the best. It's interesting when you hear like some of these injuries like lingering from the off season, and you know, like you go through training camp, preseason games, and then all of a sudden you're going to dip into the back. You know,
well, the thing that I don't understand is this has happened a few times. Well, when I was still working at that level, guys, and I'm not medical, I'm just saying, like, I don't understand. It's guys will get a shot or injection. Never seems to really work. It works for a little bit,
well,
but then
it.
That issue comes back.
Why
not just take care of this right away? I guess you're just trying to avoid surgery.
Well, that's
right?
The whole thing, right? There's that fine line of dipping in without maybe letting it heal like naturally. So the shot and all that stuff, it is a temporary solution. It doesn't last very long.
Right.
And generally that's throughout the season, getting in the playoffs. It's just like, just so the guy can get through and then you do the surgery. But like, you know, to be dipping in the back right at the start of the season. But I'd like to think that they've weighed out all options. Obviously they're trying to not have to have him have surgery, but you know, if that's like the last option because nothing else is working, you got to do it, right? And
you gotta
preserve the later half of the season. But you know, wish him the best. It's shitty news for sure for himself and the team, but it's the nature of the beast, unfortunately.
It is. Buffalo Sabres have tremendous of interest in Patrick Kane.
Yeah,
of
I hear
course.
That. Well, why
Buffalo
wouldn't?
Native.
Of course.
He's got mitts like mine. I mean, how could you not want him?
Don't blame them.
Yeah, he's back on the ice, baller, and Debo said. They were at the rink. They will not disclose the rink he was at, but they were both there. We got pictures. Just throw those up, Debo, when you in a minute. So I will say this. It was nice to see Coots back on the ice in a game.
Yeah, it's been a long time
I actually
coming.
Talked to him the next day, and I said, it's nice to see you back out there, buddy, and make it through the game. And he said he felt good. He said it's just timing. It's been 20 months.
Well, yeah, it's a long time.
But I said, you know, you look good. You're moving well. So it was nice to see him back out there. Cam Atkinson was a late scratch, which we haven't really heard anything since. He said it had nothing to do with his injury from last year.
News.
So hopefully that's good news. And just precaution, I guess. Maybe just a little sore from the bag skate.
Probably just a little tweaker from the bag skate. Yeah, I'm sure. A little linger.
Yep.
Lingering muscle soreness and tightness, I would think.
If you don't stretch and do yoga.
That's right. It'll catch up to you now. Yeah, so you know what that's all about.
Remember, you do a lot of yoga and you don't have any back stuff.
That's right.
Except for checking for charity.
Well, that was it.
You gave that away.
Whew.
That wasn't good.
That was no good.
Gave everybody the fucking word.
Yeah, I should have kept that one in my back pocket.
You should have kept it in there because then we lost.
Guys were targeting my back.
They were going after you. Danny B.
He's going after my back.
He chopped you a couple times.
Yeah.
No, but it's nice to see Coots back, man. It'll be nice to see Cam back out there too. And, preseason games are, you know, I don't know. You don't read too much into them, right?
That's it, yeah. Yep, it's one of those necessary evils of getting guys some reps, you know. Just seeing how the team system's working, but I don't think that the coaching staff's putting a whole lot of stock into the outcomes of these games. You know, you can pick them apart and have some teaching clips, but I don't think that there's, you know, much to worry about as far as the way the games land up finishing, but. Certainly, there's going to be a struggle with scoring goals. So like a lot of stuff we talked about,
yeah.
There are probably still a concerns, but I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock into these preseason games. You know, still a few more left here, and
I agree. If you have a start like you did in Jersey the other night,
yeah,
first 5 minutes,
yeah,
me and Coots were actually laughing at that. He goes, "Holy cow!" First 6-7 minutes, they were buzzing, but it is what it is, and there's only, luckily for the players, there's only 6 games. I don't know if that's luckily, but for some guys, they'd probably wish it was more because they might get more looks. Only 6 games.
I think that's plenty.
I do too.
I mean, going back, too. I mean, was it years there was 12 games or something? Like 10 games?
It was like
12 games. Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah. Way too much.
Like 3 to 4 nights in a row.
Oh, man, it was miserable.
Awful. Couldn't stand it. But
yeah, but
anyway.
Yeah, so I think that's a wrap here, Nas. Yep. Ready to rock.
Let's do it.
Yeah, episode 127 with our friend Kevin Cauley, former New York Islander. Let's go.
Let's go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. This week, we are fortunate to have a guy that battled his way all the way to the show, undrafted, watched play a lot of hockey, our friend Kevin Cauley. What's up, brother?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
We appreciate you taking the time, man. You look great, man.
You do.
I feel the best that I've felt in 20 years, at least. It's been quite a journey to get to this point. I wouldn't, I guess, change any of it for the world, because where I'm at right now, it's just it's beautiful, and a lot of ups and downs along the way, as we all experience. But right now, the position I'm in a great spot, and just fortunate and blessed to be unlocked and where I'm at right now versus where I was just even a couple months ago. It's amazing.
Wow. So it's so awesome to hear. It's great to see you again. And, I'm not even sure where to start exactly, how to prompt this, but, your story is incredible. You're battling your way up through the minor leagues and finding your way to the NHL, essentially living your childhood dream, playing in the NHL, and then having, a career-ending injury, broken neck, and then life after that. I mean, I don't want to tell your story, so maybe just talk about, I guess, the ending of your career and your last maybe 10, 15 years and the struggles and where you are today, and work backwards.
Yeah, so just I'll start with the injury itself. It was a freak accident. I just went to hit Jamie Heward the last second. He kind of lunged out of the way, and his stick was laying there and just tripped me up. Freak accident, and Supermaned it into the boards. I wasn't paralyzed, but I was numb from my earlobes down, and it just felt like I was on fire. I had Brad Lukowich and Eric Goddard on the ice when it happened. I laid there for however long, 10, 15 minutes. And then I had Brad and Eric lift me up, skate me off the ice. And then I walked all the way around Nassau Coliseum. Riley, that's not an up-to-date facility. So I had to walk all the way around the basement of the Nassau Coliseum to get an x-ray by myself, no assistance, get the picture. I walked all the way back around the other side of the rink to the training room. No assistance, by myself. And then right when I sat down, that's when all the doctors and trainers come running in and start cutting off all my gear, strap my head down, ambulance. And then honestly, within 2 hours of when I broke my neck, I had a halo drilled into my skull. And it just happened that quick. Where everything had just, I knew that was it. Obviously, that was the end of my career. And I just phoned in my dad. It was his first game at Nassau Coliseum. So it was just, I really kind of battling my injury, but also really worried about my dad being concerned about what just happened to his kid. So it was obviously pretty emotional. And then, Mike Milbury's GM at the time, he flew me in to receive the Bob Nystrom Award. And at the time I had lawyered up because, I skated off the ice. It didn't take me off in a stretcher, and I did all this walking.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
The bones of the building. Yeah. It's crazy. I've shared this, but not publicly before. Again, there's no pity party or poor Kevin Colley. It's just facts of what happened. People ask all the time. So I'm okay to share it. So Mike sat me down and he's like, all right, well, what will this take for you not to sue us? If I offer you a lifetime job, will that work? And being 27, just playing the NHL was a dream come true. I would have played for free in the NHL for 15 years. I would have played for free and just lived off per diem. I would have been fine with that.
Yeah.
So when they're going to say, all right, don't sue us, you can be an NHLer for the rest of your life and work with the New York Islanders. And I'm like, yes, that's what I want to do, because hockey is my life. That's out of anything. That's what I know the most about and I'm passionate about. So again, just being young in front of Mike, it's pretty intimidating. It was a handshake, gentleman's agreement. Mistake on my part, I didn't get anything on paper. And then Mike got fired and the old owner didn't want to look after me. And that was it. And just kind of parted ways. And I'm not talking negative about the Islanders. I get treated great from the new owners and the people that run the organization now. But just I think that led into a lot of animosity, too, of how I got treated exiting the NHL, of how I was promised I was going to be looked after. So I think that really – I never come out and really admitted that before until now. Now I'm starting to see, like, how much it really affected me of – yeah, I'm just a piece of meat. They don't even care about me. I broke my neck and just way you go. So I think that internally bothered me more than I let on and really knew about. But that was a long time ago. I'm over it. And that's basically the bones of my injury. And then I went into coaching and had a good 9 years doing that. Really enjoyed it. And unfortunately, I got hooked on pain pills and went to rehab for that. Then everything just started kind of slowly downward spiraling just with my mental state. That was just the PTSD and the TBIs from the injury and post-concussions. I didn't win a lot of fights because I had to fight guys like Riley that, you know, one punch, they can break your face. But that's just what you're willing to do to make the NHL.
Right.
So it just, yeah, that's when it just really started to, when I was coaching pro, that's when it just kind of slowly started, my mental health just started really deteriorating and finding these rabbit holes, and I'd pop out for a week or two and then go back in, and it was just a vicious cycle and just very fortunate. I don't want to skip too far ahead. Let me know, Riles, you guys, if I'm jumping too quick, but if Riley didn't pick up that phone when I had that white towel out in the end of May, early June, I don't know if we're sitting here talking together. So just, it's amazing that everything lined up just perfect of Riley being there at the right time for when I needed him, got me set up with Wake, and then now the sky's the limit.
Yeah,
that's awesome to hear, man.
Yeah, it
really is.
Well, it's a beautiful ending to it all. We'll dig into that, you know. But your injury happened in your 16th NHL game, which is, like, again, it's devastating. Your father is there, you know, dealing with beyond the injury, like, as you mentioned, the emotional, psychological component of, you know, and your childhood dream ending, and then, you know, having a promise that you'd be in the system, in the game forever, and then having that, you know, slip through the cracks, a lot of just, like, dead weight, you know, probably on your shoulders, on the mind. But when you reached out to me, you had watched this ESPN E60 documentary, you know, Steve Downey, you know, our good friend, and a few other athletes. And obviously it resonated with you, right? I mean, you were looking for hope, right? Cause it sounded like, you know, talking to you, that, like, everything that you've done and been prescribed and all this stuff didn't work.
It didn't.
Is that
I
fair
was
to say?
Hit the nail on the head. Since my injury, I've tried every pharmaceutical drug, from bipolar to every kind of antidepressants to boosters on top of that, to anxiety medication, to these four other ones. And it just totally, for me personally, I think the pharma drug stops you from being unlocked again. I think once you're kind of in that pharmaceutical and you're dependent on antidepressants and anxiety medication, all that, you're just such in a fog You have no confidence. You're like a hamster on a wheel, but the wheel wasn't spinning and I didn't know how to get off the wheel. So I was paralyzed, just sitting there like a stump, not knowing what to do. So confused. I couldn't think for myself because the medication that I was on was just fogging everything. I didn't know right from wrong, wrong from right. It's just very confusing and just have zero hope when you're in that state. And then when I talked to Riley, instantly I had a little hope, and that's all I was looking for, is like, I need just something to hold on to right now to get me to where I need to go. And that, just that hope and seeing that it does work was very intriguing. I knew this is what I had to do. My wife knew this is what I had to do. It was truly just life-changing, life-saving for me.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's awesome. You know, I think what you're describing is like these drugs numb emotional pain, physical pain, you know, mental pain, right? So you're not able to grow or evolve, right? Or to even to make sense of a lot of stuff. Like the clarity's not there, right? And I think that's what you're talking to. And yeah, like the, you know, the psilocybin mushrooms helps open up perception and you're able to feel more, right? Because feeling is part of the human experience, right? It's like we just numb everything. And I think that's what you probably landed up you know, feeling, right? At the end of the day, is that ability to feel again.
It's amazing. I can feel again. I never thought I would be present in the moment. It's hard to describe when you're in such a mental fog, when you're on these pharmaceutical drugs. You feel just so helpless. There's no way out. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I mean, I really don't, because it's that bad. It's that paralyzing. All you want to do is not hurt anybody. You don't want to hurt yourself, but you just want to go off into the sunset. And you have no feeling. So you disregard of really what reality is, of family and friends and love and truth. You don't feel any of that. You don't have any, it's just, you don't know, and you don't think about, okay, well, my kids are not going to have a father anymore. When you're in a rabbit hole, like you think about it, but you don't feel it. So I was telling myself they're going to cry for a week and then they're going to be better off maybe, you know, without me. So that's really tough when you are just wanting to be normal and better, but you feel there's no way out. A lot of people think it's selfish, and maybe it is for some people that die by, you know, throwing in the towel. But until you're kind of in those shoes, you don't know how painfully bad it is, not day to day, it's minute to minute. It's a constant battle with my automatic thoughts and my frontal lobe since I got hurt, just pinging back and forth and just digging that trench nonstop, but just arguing with myself. There's just, I was so locked up. I couldn't take in information. I couldn't learn new things. I was just so in my way and didn't know how to get out of it, because, again, I believe these pharmaceutical drugs just locked me in and I had nowhere to go but maybe to try doubling up on those drugs and trying something else. But I've tried so much. I was just at that, so deep in that rabbit hole. Something was got to happen, because I couldn't just go on anymore. And then just talking to Riley and you know, watching Peace of Mind, and just seeing this to athletes that I can relate with that were experienced the same symptoms and everything that I was going through, I could relate to that. And then now I see that they're doing great on the other side of things, mentally and spiritually and physically. I knew if it could work for them, it could work for me. I knew it was just something that I had to do is follow that lead and get down there and get the right medicine that my body was desperately been wanting for so long.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I don't know if you want to pipe in here, Nast. I mean,
well, it's just, it is incredible. Like, you know, that your story, like I said earlier, you know, you battled your way up, you get there and you have this, you know, just a freak accident, but people don't see this backside, you know, there of what you actually start going through. And we've talked about this before with Riley, does so much work with people, and he's amazing. we've watched so many teammates just like Downs, like you were talking about, but other guys as well, and other guys in hockey and other sports. But it's sad people don't understand what they're going through. And it's awesome that, I mean, it's not awesome what you went through, but it's awesome that you're here and you're where you are now. And I'm happy you saw that before it was too late. You
know, right. That's exactly it. And it's, if I can just help one person by doing this, then that's why I'm doing it. It's just to share my story, and everyone goes through heartaches and that's just life and stuff like that. But there are alternative medicines that can help it. Again, I thought I was the most effed up person to ever walk. I really did. I mean, even though I could see the results in Riley and Downs and you know, some of these, you know, military guys that have gone it and, you know, it changed their life. And you still have those doubts that you still think you're the most effed up person to ever walk the earth. But once I got to Jamaica and just I let it go and was vulnerable, that's when everything just changed and the medicine was allowing to do its thing and do the work it needed to do.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Because, you know, I always, you know, try and communicate, you know, maybe what happens in these experiences, you know, for our listeners, you know, from a different perspective, like, you know, outside of helping with your actual, you know, the brain, you know, the TBI component, maybe the damage that was done there, like, there's an emotional attachment to the physical trauma. You know, can you talk about like some of the unpacking that you did in those, you know, four or five days in Jamaica?
Yeah. So Wake, what they put on is first class, like from the brain scans that they do while you're there. I did a brain scan in Toronto prior, the blood work, the sleep tracking. But really the integration and the educational part, they go hand in hand with the medicine. Because if I didn't learn everything I learned in Jamaica with how to look after yourself, how to practice breathing, meditating, just big things, like everything's temporary. So like, why be so angry? Because that's just going to pass in a second, and just controlling your emotions. So like the medicine was huge for me, but just as huge was how much education I took out of our daily integrations, our conversations with the tribe when we were there. It just really blew my mind, really. Like, there were so many coincidences that weren't coincidences. Everything happened for a reason. And it was so often, from the time I talked to you, Riley, to the time I left the airport in Jamaica, like the coincidences were mind-blowing, where I was just like, because now I can feel again, I'm just like in awe of what is going on. This is amazing. Like I'm hearing people talk and I'm in the moment with the conversation. I'm not arguing with myself while somebody's talking to me. It was just so beautiful to be in a situation, but doing the integration and having all that information and education while we were there set me up for post Jamaica to do my practice, which I do every morning. I can do it in the afternoon with the breathing, but I'm being disciplined and I'm staying on it. And it's just truly remarkable what Wake does there with Riley and the rest of the team and the doctors, the CEO, Nick. It was just so refreshing to be around people that want to see the best version of you. And they just want you to be better. And we know there's a lot of evil in this world. And that's all I saw was evil, evil, evil. And then here I come to Jamaica with Riles and Wake. And I'm like, wow, people actually, they do care. They do want to see me better and get out of this. And they want to help a lot of people. And it was just so new to me because I was used to, whether you're a coach, you're always under pressure to win games. When I worked for the Dallas Stars, you're dealing with in the field I was in, you're dealing with a lot of customer service. And so you're dealing with just negative, negative, negative all the time. Then all of a sudden you're like, you're unlocked. And then you're around people that are loving and want the best for you. It was just such a breath of fresh air. I didn't think I would ever experience or feel that. 3 months ago, I would have said, you're nuts, but here we are. It's just truly remarkable.
That's so cool to hear you explain it that way. Yeah. And you mentioned the integration piece, and I think that's the most important piece when we talk about psilocybin mushrooms or psychedelics, as far as their role as being a catalyst for change, is that the integration piece is the most important piece. Like, that's the ownership in it, right? The accountability. And like, you know, when you look inwards, you have to take action after you've looked inwards. And I think the medicine on its own is just an experience, you know, for lasting transformation, as you alluded to. The integration is the most important, the practice of, right? And that's owning it, because now you're responsible for your own outcomes, right? And I think that's where a lot of people get it wrong, is they play victim and they want someone or something outside of themselves to heal them, you know, where, well, yes, the mushrooms themselves acted as a catalyst, then they did something, you know, physiologically and mentally and spiritually, but nonetheless, like, to sustain that, you own that and you have to do that. And I think that's what you're talking about. I think that is the most important piece, because otherwise we're just outsourcing everything, the doctor, the this, and, you know, these people can't help, but at the end of the day, it's about us, and we are the healers of our own, you know, journey and our own issues, right? We have to own it. And I think you really touched on that in a beautiful way.
Yeah, it's work and it's practice. You know, waking up at 5:30 to start your workout, like, a lot of people don't spring out of bed and be like, all right, let's get going. You know what I mean? So it's work, it's practice. And that's what's kind of fun to me, because now, like, I haven't been disciplined for a long, long time, because I've been just in my own world. Now I get to challenge myself to see what I'm made of again. You know, I knew what I was made of and how determined I was to get to the NHL. All right, well, now I'm determined and dedicated to see where I, how great I can be as the best version Kevin Cawley. So I'm sticking to the daily practice and the routines, and that integration and the education is just as important as the medicine, because you could do the retreat and come back, and if you don't practice and you get into eating bad and sleeping, you know, patterns are off, you're probably going to slip a little bit. So I don't want to go back to that spot. So that's, I know it works. I've seen it work. And that's just my daily goal, is to get up. I started running now. I mean, I haven't ran since I played. So I'm running, I'm meditating, doing some yoga, lifting some weights, doing a swim. So I do three of those five things every morning before I start my day. And it's just a great way to start. And I feel mentally refreshed, ready to take on whatever that day offers. Where before, I go sit and hide in a fetal position in my bed. I wouldn't even get out, you know? So it's really remarkable. Like, I'm sitting there, I hear the birds chirp in the morning. I'm like, oh, like, I'm just loving nature again. I grew up in, you know, the wild almost, you know, in the country. And it's just good to, like, really, you can notice birds chirping. And, you know, I like my palm trees. And it's just, there's so many, I just look at the world so different now, because I'm unlocked. And I just feel like I'm normal, somebody that never had all these injuries with their head and battled the depressions and all the pharma drugs and everything that accumulated with me. I feel like I'm normal, and other people, you know, it's like, I always said, like, when I walked in Walmart, like, how are people laughing and having fun in Walmart? This is when I was depressed and angry all the time, because they're just in that moment and they're having fun. Where now I can look, now I'm the person in Walmart walking around, like, smile on my face, like, oh yeah, life is good, you know? So, like, it's just kind of use that analogy, but it's so true. Is now that I've picked my head up and I can see clearer, I'm just amazed at where it's gotten me. But there's a lot of work to go,
for sure. And, you know, everything you're saying is just so important for people to hear. Is just like, you're choosing to live, right? You're choosing life versus, you know, the opposite of life, right? I mean, waking up in a fetal position, not doing anything, isn't living, right? It's like, you're waking up and you're being human, you're moving, you're breathing, you're enjoying it, you're having fun, and perspective shifts naturally, right? And I think that is owning it, and the love piece, right? There's an element of self-love that now is able to be admitted to the world you're talking about, going to Walmart, you're smiling, you're emitting love, right? It's versus like, you know, the opposite side of like, oh shit, why are these people smiling and laughing? Like, and you look like unbelievable. Like, honestly, like you look better than I remember you in Jamaica and then, you know, the integration calls. So it's like, you're glowing and it's showing because it's coming from within and you're doing the work. So, I mean,
yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, it's just, it excites me because it's just, you know, for anybody that's out there like struggling, man, I'm telling you, like there is hope, you know, there's hope.
Telling you, it's amazing. Again, there's no special pill you can take and be great. There's alternative great medicine out there. And then again, it's looking inward. And what do you want? What version of you do you want to be? I want to be the best version I can be. So I know I need to practice and do the work daily to be the best version I can be. So there is hope out there. If there's anybody that's in that rabbit hole, there is faith. So keep some faith close to your heart. And there's ways to get out of this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So just the shifting gears to your hockey career and, kind of picking up where you left off around your new perspective and, you know, kind of feeling that old Kevin Colley and that energy and that attitude, you know, growing up and the way you made the NHL. Talk about, you know, your energy and attitude growing up. You played in juniors in Oshawa and then eventually East Coast League, American League, finding your way to the NHL. But that attitude there, I remember playing against you, we fought a couple times. You were, you know, a reckless, hard player. Just talk about that and just how that pertains to life and the energy you bring to the rink and you know, day to day.
Yeah, I mean, my whole family is super sports oriented. My dad played pro hockey. He got one game in the NHL. My mom competed internationally as a figure skater. It was top three in Canada at one point. So wow. I grew up at the rink. I lived at the rink. My family, super competitive. So like that was instilled in me at a very young age. It was all about finishing first, always. Like it was maybe a little bit over the top of how competitive we were.
If you're not first, you're last.
If you're not first, you're last. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And that's exactly kind of how it is. And it was the old school mentality. If you're not first, I mean, you can take that second place trophy and you can throw it out or chuck it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was super competitive from when I was real young. And yeah, I grew up in a small town. My hockey journey started taking really, you know, catching people's eyes at a young age. I was in the newspaper quite a bit, starting off really young. And then, you know, I got drafted to Oshawa. We had some killer teams there. Went to the Mem Cup. Had a really good coach in Bill Stewart, who was old school, tough guy. Very hard on me moving away at 16. I needed that father figure, more full time because obviously moving away. So he pushed me and challenged me and kind of molded me into a pro when I was 16. That's when I started to develop that. Listen, if you're not going to score 50 goals every year, you're going to have to fight. I'm sorry. And he used to call me Tommy because he knew my dad. So Tommy, like, I'm sorry, but like, if you don't score 50 every year, you're going to have to fight once in a while. And if you're not fighting, it means you're not playing hard enough. So I took that and, you know, I was putting up some good numbers in junior, but I also spent quite a bit of time in the penalty box just to have, I wanted to have more tools in my shed than the other players on my team or the players I was playing as. Like, I wanted to be great at blocking shots. I wanted to fight. I wanted to score goals. I wanted to sit. I wanted to do everything because I really wanted to be the best teammate and do everything that the coach was asked for me. So that's the makeup of me. It was just whatever it takes to win hockey games. That's Kevin Colley in a nutshell. Fortunately, I probably took things too far. Some nights I was reckless. I had disregard for my health and safety along with, players I was playing against. And, you know, I was raised, the Colleys are smaller. We're not big. And it was all about protecting yourself. And I was taught it from a young age. If these big guys want to take advantage of it, you have a weapon in your hand. You have a stick. So yeah. I was really good at using my stick. And another good tool that was learned was early on the season when the games aren't as meaningful is try to play cross the line as teeter that line and cross the line early in the season. So in the second half of the season, you have more of a 5-foot bubble around you. Guys don't want to go near you because they're afraid they're going to get stuck again with the stick. Yeah. I mean, I was a dirty player. I was ruthlessly dirty with my stick, but I needed to create some more time and space for myself out there to put up some points. So I'm not really proud on how I just didn't have any regard for the health and safety of my opponents or myself, but it was just, that was my mentality is I'm going to do whatever it takes to make the NHL. If you want me to score 40, I'm going to do my best to score 40. I found out real quick once I got to the American League, I wasn't even going to score 20 there. So I had to really dive into fighting more, blocking more shots and doing more of the other stuff that I liked doing. It's just when at all costs. And that's why I think, you know, my teammates, you know, enjoyed having me on their team and, you know, the fans and the coaches usually liked me. So it was good entertainment, but just a lot of reckless and just disregard for human brain and just safety of others.
Well, my dad worked in hockey a long time. I kind of followed in his footsteps, but he used to say, there's no beavers out there. They can't eat that wood, you know, twig.
Yeah, I love it.
He used to say that all the time. There's no beavers out there. So,
yeah.
So you get that stick up.
Yeah, get the stick up.
Yeah. But no, you were a hard-nosed player, man. I saw you play quite a bit, and two lefties going at it, you two. Yeah. Just chucking the left bombs. But you definitely are a team favorite. Riley was the same every, you know, I had Riley a long time, and he was always the favorite guy on the team, and because everyone appreciates that energy and what you're willing to do for the team to win.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a hard job, man. And Riley's kind of the same boat as you. He figured out, okay, well, I'm not going to score 30. He does in men's league though. Yeah. He scores 30 in men's league now.
But
you know, I got to find my,
for when it matters.
Yeah. Right. That's what we say. But you know, you guys battled hard, man. It's a hard battle to get there, and you both made it. So it's super impressive.
It is. I mean, and Riles, I'm sure it's said it many times. Fighting's like, you can get through the fight on adrenaline. It's really, for me, what was really hard mentally was the 4 days between games when you knew the Flyers were coming to town and they had eight guys that are okay fighting three times a game. I mean,
yeah. So, that's the truth, too. That's the truth.
You know, and it's so the anxiety just leading up to just knowing who you're going to play 4 days down the road. You do a lot of self-medicating.
Yeah.
A lot of self-medicating, taking your mind off of what you know is about to happen, even though it's not going to be for another 4 days. But that, for me, that just tore my guts up. And just, if I didn't self-medicate, I knew I wouldn't get any sleep. And not saying that's why I self-medicated, but it is so demanding mentally. A lot of people I don't think understand what goes into that role. It's just not going out saying, hey, do you want to go drop the gloves? It's like days leading up to it, watching film on a handful of guys you may have to fight, see their tendencies, and sit there and wondering, is my face going to get broken tonight? And for me, I can handle myself against the middleweights, maybe low end middle heavies, but I started fighting some heavyweights because, again, I was willing to do whatever it took. The same year that, you know, Riley and I had a couple dust ups, I fought Colt Knorr. I mean, and these guys are, you know, top five in NHL heavyweights, but I'm just willing to do whatever it takes. And again, I wouldn't change anything for it. I got to live and play in NHL, and I am proud of myself for doing what it took to get.
Yeah,
there.
You so, should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Because where it comes from is heart, right? It's like it's the attitude, it's the effort, it's the, you know, just the grind itself, right? Which you could take that and apply it to anything in life, right? And a lot of people don't have that, so yeah, you should be proud because you know you did what you had to, and there was no legitimate roadmap. Like I was very similar to you. Like, you know, it was like I grew up, you know, as like a big fish in a small pond, and you realize, holy shit, I'm not that good. And like if I really want to live out this dream, I got to do something out of my comfort zone, and it's getting your hands dirty. And as you mentioned, like the emotional, mental, spiritual part of the fight is the hardest part. The physical part was the easy part. You said, like, it's like, yeah, the adrenaline will take care of that. You get in the fight, it's like, that's easy. But like worrying about all these guys, you got to fight the next fight, the next fight, the next fight. It's like the only way you can describe it is this chronic state of anxiety. Like your nervous system is taxed to the max, right? It's like there's no relaxation in it unless, you know, you self-medicate. And I didn't really have a breathing or meditation practice back then, so it was a lot of self-medicating.
Yeah, Burger King. Yeah, Burger 3 a.m. Yeah, when we were right? coming home. Like,
that's exactly. We didn't have these integrated the information to how to handle that kind of pressure and anxiety. Wish I had known that back in the day, probably would have been a little bit enjoying life. But yeah, it's just like even after practice, you're just looking to escape instantly. For me, like lunch, beers, nap, early dinner, beers, into the night, beers, extra activities. Not good, bad decisions. Again, I don't have any regrets because I had a heck of a time in my short career. I had a lifetime full of great memories, bad decisions, but they were good when you're young and enjoying that lifestyle. So we had a lot of fun, but it really wears on you mentally being playing in that role. It really does.
Yeah, there's so many guys we've had on that, and we know, and guys we didn't know said exact same thing. Like I couldn't imagine what you guys were doing. We met back in 2004.
Yeah.
And we became really good friends. And then we actually lived together one summer, and nice. guys would make fun of me. Cause when he was fighting, I would be on the bench, like
shadow box,
trying to move. And I remember Harry the one day going, "Hey, you're all right. Like, I think you're worse. Like Ryle's the one fighting, not you." And guys would always make fun of me because I'm like ducking and weaving so he doesn't get hit. Like, that's gonna work.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But I couldn't imagine. I had anxiety just because, you know, like when guys on my team fight, like that I was working with, like, but just the anxiety you guys must have. You know, you're going out there, there's 20,000 people in the stands, and you got to fight. It's just not. Oh man.
Yeah.
God bless you both.
Roz and I were talking when we were in Jamaica. There, it's like we fought twice in one game. Like I think I grazed him one the first fight with one, and he didn't like that. And then in the penalty box, right, he's like, "We're going again." I'm like, "Come on, dude! Like, all right." But like, so he got me a lot better the second time. But then to find out, I'd forgot that he had to go out and fight Eric Goddard in the third period.
Yeah,
and it's just Godzi is he's
a big man.
He's a big man. Throws the old triggers. So, that's again just going out fighting three times and then ending it with Godzi in the third period, and it was a road game for y'all. Just what you're willing to do to get to the NHL, right? It's just
It's remarkable. It's funny you bring that up. Yeah, I was talking to Nasty about it before he got on, just like that third fight with Godzi. I was like, I must have drank more coffee than normally did and take a couple extra Sudafed, because I remember like in the third period, normally I'm like winding down a little bit. Like, I think what happened on that play, I was like, you talk about being dirty with your stick. For some reason, I just like, I whacked whoever it was. I don't even know, the back of the leg. And
And then all of a sudden I realized, like, after I did it, like they're not happy about that slash. And then there was, I don't even know if it was a legitimate line change, but all of a sudden I see Godsey coming off the bench and he come right after him, like, oh, here we go. Like,
well,
third fight in the game here. I'm like, geez, like,
I know. So Riles, after you told me that, I got thinking, like, Godsey was my roommate that year.
Okay. Oh, all right.
So he just probably saw me fight you twice. And I guarantee in the second intermission, I would have said, all right, Godsey, like, he just dusted me pretty good here. Do you want to try to get redemption for me a little bit? You know, so I probably poked him a little bit to maybe go out and do the fighting for me, because I couldn't do it well against you. So if I did that, I apologize. But I know you guys held your own just fine. So.
Yeah. It's just the nature of the beast, I guess. We signed up for it, right? It was just part of the game. And, you know, transitioning to the next piece we want to talk about, like, you know, everything you're talking about is like a coach's dream, right? Is like, you have a guy that's like fully understanding of his role, you know, waking up every day, showing up at the rink, you know, pouring his heart into it. Like, it's a coach's dream. And then you evolved into being a coach, your assistant coach, I think, a year. And then your head coach, maybe 5 years in the coast, a year in the Central League. Like, you are a coach. You're a coachable guy, you know, and I line up coaching as well after my playing career. It just seems like a fitting thing for us to do, because it's like, we understand what the type, you know, we just understand like what a coach wants, and that, you know, and maybe trying to be the best version of ourselves to teach the way we wanted to be taught. But talk about, you know, your coaching and, you know, bringing that passion into that side of the fence.
I mean, I love coaching. Just a team aspect and the camaraderie. I know you're a coach, so you're not like in the locker room with the guys, but you travel together. You have one goal in mind, that's to win the championship. Doesn't matter what level you're at. So I after my playing career, getting in that was the next best thing, and I absolutely loved it. The only thing that I would like a mulligan on my coaching career is I was on pain pills. I can say that I wasn't really clear headed. So that kind of little bad decisions or whatever it is, just being hooked on the pain meds. I would like to try coaching clear headed and not been on the pain pills, but, I did, the best I could. The one thing I can, you know, rest my head on my pillow at night is I always looked after my players first over my success as a coach. I always tried to look after my guys by calling the American League teams or if somebody was really deserving of a call up. I spent man hours trying to get them their deserving call up, because when I was in East Coast League, if I didn't have Mike Havlin and some of these other coaches in my corner, I don't think I would have got that chance at the next level. So that's what I really spent a lot of my time and pride on, was how many guys can I get called up, even though I know it's going to hurt my personal winning record. I was there for the players more than I was for me. So I'm very proud of that. I still, to this day, out of any coaches, I've coached more players that end up in the NHL. And I take great pride in that, because I help them, those players out. So
yeah.
Awesome.
My coaching career, that aspect means a lot to me, that I helped out, you know, a lot of players. For me personally, I would like to see how I would have reacted and handled things clear headed and not on pain medicine. And you know, that's when I was drinking heavily as well too. We haven't touched too much on that. I was a functioning alcoholic even when I coached, until coming up in a month, I'll be 5 years sobriety from no alcohol. So,
oh, nice.
Good for you.
Congrats. That's awesome.
Been a lot of battles, yeah, but overcome. Just keep swinging, keep moving. Yeah.
Well, I gotta ask you, and it's not to make light of the pain pills and the alcohol, but how good did it feel to empty the stick rack onto the ice as a coach? That must have been fucking awesome, man.
It felt so fucking good. I mean, the crowd was going nuts. And again, it wasn't my proudest moment. Okay. But
I know.
I mean, there's a time where, like, we're at home. You don't want to act out on the road because it's a waste. You want to do it in front of your fans. Right. And Utah, we got a beautiful building there. We have good crowds.
Yep.
And I mean, my players were just, it was like 6-1, and the ref obviously clearly didn't like me, probably from a previous game, whatnot. But my players were just being put in situations where it wasn't safe for them. And there was no penalties being called. And it was just that bad. And there was, I don't know, like 6 seconds left in the game. And guy two hands James Sixsmith in the corner. And then on the back check, he just gives him a little tug. And then the arm goes up. And then I'm already thinking to myself, if I see that arm go up, I'm losing my shit. I see the arm go up, and I'm like, all right, this is going to be, I'm going up. And I grabbed those sticks, and my intention was I tried to put one in every direction, as many as possible. So that ref had to skate all over the ice and pick them up. You can see in the video, I got my equipment guy trying to grab the sticks and put them back. So I'm like, you leave those sticks alone. You're not touching them. And I told the players before I left to go to the locker room, I'm like, you, not one of you guys are touching a stick. Those three officials are picking up every one. So it felt amazing.
Yeah.
Obviously, some slap in the wrist with suspensions and fines and stuff like that. But I mean, at the ECHL level, my owner, he was fine with it. My president was fine with it because we're getting some airtime on TSN and marketing and stuff like that. So we can laugh about it right now, but in the moment, I was pretty heated, obviously, but sticking up for my players. That's why I did it. Obviously made the point, and I'll tell you, that was the last game that referee ever did professionally.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really? Wow. Hey.
Well, it was funny. We were watching the video, and I remember seeing it now when I watched it again today, and Riles goes, oh, I thought the equipment guy was like going to hand them to him. And I said, he's trying to put him back. I was like, I'm going to ask him if he fired the kid for putting him back on the rack.
You could see me look at him going, what are you doing? And I went back and grabbed him on there. But it was
a good strategy.
Yeah.
I wanted to cover as much real estate on the ice with as many sticks as possible, and make it worthwhile. If I was going to do it, I'm going to go big.
Yeah, you might as well do it. Yeah.
That's well thought out.
I mean, it was just a reaction that just blacked out, really. Yeah. I'm glad I kept my clothes on, really, because I've seen some Pankowitz that was in Colorado, and Panky had a good episode of ripping off his shirt. He was in a lot better shape than me at the time, so he could do that. That's probably why I kept my shirt on. But it was a good one. It was fun.
That's funny.
Yeah, well, we'll show the clip while we talk about this when this airs. But like I say, like, good strategy. Like, I'm thinking, like, if that was me, I would just grab the bundle and just throw them all over. Like, you were like thinking this through. It's like one over here,
that way. Yeah. I wanted that to work for it.
Yeah, so good. Yeah. What coach that you had? You talked about your junior coach there that kind of like really kind of, you know, maybe shed some light on the type of game you had to play. Who's your favorite coach? You had, you know, several of them in the minors and then NHL there.
Yeah. So Bill Stewart, he played for the Leafs. He was a heavyweight, just old school, full on barbarian. The dirty thing, I learned a lot of dirty things from him as well. We had a really good team. We had Mark Savard and John Tripp and Marty Wilford, and you know, all these guys played Marty, a long time. Yeah, he's in Buffalo.
Hello, Marty.
So we had a good team, but it didn't matter. You know, I was a first year guy and third line, but he was probably harder on me than the rest of the guys, because he knew I could take it and I would respond exactly how he would want me to respond to get the other team going. So he knew exactly how to, what buttons to push and when to do it. And he was super hard on me, but super loving. Like, yeah, if I was having a bad day, arm around me, like, hey, let's just go for coffee. And he just knew me on a personal level too. So it was just a great relationship I had with Billy. Mike Havlin in the ECHL, we won a championship together in Atlantic City. He was a major influence and factor in me making that next step. He went to win one or two Stanley Cups with the Blackhawks when they had that run there as a coach. So I owe a lot to Mike, just a great kind of salt of the earth guy. You don't hear that too much as a coach, as a makeup. He would give the shirt off his back, and I owe a lot to Mike. He wasn't really hard on me. He understood me and kind of coddled me a little bit more than Bill did. But that time, that's what I needed. The other coach is Greg Cronin, who now coaches Anaheim. Mm-hmm. Major respect for this guy. He coached me when I played for Team USA World Juniors. And that's when he had just stopped his drinking, and he's been sober since. So he's always been, again, like almost like a, because I lived away from my dad, like the in-house father figure of, listen, I'm going to do everything you ask. And if they could read on my face, I had a bad day, they treated me like their son. And that's really what stuck with me, is like, at the end of the day, they care about Kevin Colley. And those maybe are probably why they're my three best coaches. Cause I know deep down they rode my ass harder than anybody else, but I knew deep down they cared about me. Right. Yeah. And they knew where I wanted to go, and they knew what I needed to do to get there, and they helped push me, but they're also there to help me through some difficult times. Just as a human being. So just not as hockey coaches, but just as people and mentors, those three, Billy Stewart, Mike Havlin, and Greg Cronin, just, I don't know where I would have got without them. I wouldn't have got far.
That's cool.
Yeah. What an influence they've had.
I love hearing that. And then where you're sitting right now in your life, you know, from a coach's perspective, if you were to talk to your, you know, say, you know, 18, 19, 20 year old self as a person, you know, before the hockey player, I know it's a bit of a challenging question. Is there any advice you give yourself, knowing what you know now, like after you've gone through the ringer and experienced all the darkness and kind of seen this new shift and this new perspective?
Yeah, I would think that not knowing the future is okay. I always got caught up in the fear of not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow or next year, and like that fighting for your next contract. Like, you just, there's so many intangibles that just are unknown. I would just say it's temporary. And now that I know how to breathe properly and yoga and meditate and how valuable it is, I would have dove into that when I was younger. I would have made a lot better decisions. I would have been a lot healthier. I would have been as reckless. And I think I still would have found a way to make the NHL, because I was that determined, without being so reckless and not giving a shit about my health or anybody else around me. So I think I would have been a lot more mindful, because I would have had the practice to carry myself as the best version of Kevin Colley back when I was 18, 19, not being a young buck causing on a daily and getting into trouble on the daily. I would have probably saved myself a lot of problems.
That's good advice. Yeah, it's the presence, right? It's like, we're, you know, I'm guilty for it. I'm sure most people are, just, you know, living too far in the future, right? And it's like you just kind of almost forget about the moment and enjoying that moment, right? Because it's the only time that exists, right? I mean, the future is not here yet. And when it does arrive, it's still the present moment, you know? And I think we get caught in these traps.
That's it. I mean, since my injury to now, I was trapped. I mean, there was nowhere to go. And it's just, it was 18 years of, I got the 18 years I will never get back. I've got great memories in there. It's where I met my wife, and I've got my kids, and, you know, I did hockey, and there's a lot of good memories in there. But I'll never get those 18 years back of not being present and having the feelings that I'm able to feel now. But, and I'm okay with that, because I got through it. I'm on the other side. Now I get to look forward to how I'm going to finish off the final, I don't know if it's half life or what, but as I start, he's getting older, my goal is just to live as pure and as joyful as Kevin Colley can be. And that's what I'm looking forward to now, is reconditioning my brain to knowing that there is a lot of love out there. There's a lot of great people out there. Bad times, they're temporary. They come and go, like everything in life. I'm just very more mindful and grounded, and have a lot more humility, empathy for people now. I always had sympathy, but I never had empathy. Now I can feel the empathy, which I've been asking to feel that for a long time. So it's just, it's a heck of a story. It was a hell of a ride. And now I'm looking forward to just a real good, positive, loving family, friends, and riding the rest of our time, my time, sees fit. And just, again, I just want to be a good human being, a good Kevin Colley.
Yeah. Well, you are, and you're being, being vulnerable, sharing your story, and, you know, just the openness, and I mean, everything about it is beautiful. And, and I'd like to think that as you keep sharing your story, you're going to help a lot of people. You know, it's really getting out of our comfort zone. And, you know, you and I are very similar. Like growing up, we're not trained to talk about our feelings. No. Right. And it's like funny how we're sitting here, we're talking about our feelings, and like, you know, and it's not just okay. It's necessary. It's really the only way. Right. And if these emotions need to be expressed, but I think being vulnerable and sharing your story is certainly going to touch someone's life and hopefully, help them, at least explore these other options that are life changing. So
yeah, appreciate what you're doing. Like you said, it's a necessity to talk about this. You look at, you know, like generations before us, how, you know, our parents were raised, their parents, like things have changed quite a bit. I don't think it turned out great for a lot of the old school people that, you know, were super held everything in. Right. And weren't vulnerable and shared their feelings because it was a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength now.
100%.
And they could have lived a better, peaceful life if they had been vulnerable, given in, talked, and shared the feelings. And I'm okay where I sit right now, being vulnerable. I know I'm not a pussy, because I'm sharing my life story and my hardships. And now I'm excited because of where I'm going and how I feel. I don't give a shit. I'm here to share that story of there is a way. You get through, you can go through hell, just keep walking. There's hope out there. There's faith. Now it's just see what, it's a clear canvas for me now.
Yeah,
that's beautiful. Awesome.
So exciting.
I feel I'm in a position I can do a lot of different things that I want to do, where before I was paralyzed and not a good spot, but just grateful that I'm able in a position where I'm at right now.
Amazing. And where could people find you if they're interested in, you know, reaching out and, you know, picking your brain? Do you have a website, email address, anything?
I do. I got a domain that just got set up, but my sister did it, so I have to reach out to her. Right now, the best way is just my personal email. It's kcolley04@gmail.com, and then I'll update my platforms as I get going here.
Beautiful.
Nice.
Well, brother, I appreciate you hopping on and sharing your story. It's super powerful. I'm more than grateful to have, you know, been a part, you know, and witnessed, you know, the starting point of this transformation. And like your attitude and energy is just so amazing. It's just like, it's just exactly, you know, the point of life. And I think people could see you, hear you, and people that knew you from before, but people that didn't even know you, it can hear it and see it. So it's definitely a testament to you putting yourself out there, you flying to Jamaica, doing the work and continuing to do the work, because the work never ends, right? I mean, that's the audio level of calling it work. It's just a practice, you know, it's life.
Yeah.
And, but props to you, man. And I appreciate you. And, Nasty, I appreciate you hopping on.
Thank you for having me. It means a lot. I listen to you guys all the time. Roz, I need to personally thank you for everything you've done for me. You probably don't understand the significance of it, I know in my heart how much it you've done for me. So I want to thank you. Helped save my life. So
of course,
love you, brother. Awesome. Appreciate you. Thank you for having me on. Maybe we can do another one.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Let's do it.
We appreciate you, man.
All right. Have a good day. Rest of the day. We'll be in touch.
Thanks, fellas.
All right, big thank you to our friend Kevin Colley for hopping on.
Yes, great guy, man.
Yeah, great guy. Amazing story. Glad to see him doing well. Yeah. And wish him best moving forward. So, yeah, quite the event, and it's just amazing to see how you can turn things around. And, find that happiness and find that purpose, I guess you could say, right? Yeah. I mean, it's life's a grind, and we're dealing with a broken neck and a transition into the real world and dealing with that whole thing, man. I can't imagine. So
yeah, not fun.
No,
not fun.
But great to see him doing well.
Yeah,
appreciate
man.
Him hopping on. And I think it's that time, Nas.
Is it that time?
Oh,
I believe it's time for the Clear Questions, brought to you by Clear Rum. Make sure you go to their website, Nasty 2023, for 35% off. You get that, baller? You got it, baby.
What's the website, Nast?
Clearrum.com.
Oh, you got it.
Get on there. Hydrate. It's
get the some best cucumbers, some purple gosh. Pash.
People keep taking all my stock. They come in. My customers come in. Seriously, they're like, it's unbelievable. I'm like, yeah, I know.
You mean it's not you drinking between grinds?
I wouldn't mind having one, but no, not between grinds. I don't drink and grind. I don't drink and grind skates.
yeah, right.
I might grind, but I'm not grind skates. Oh, sorry about that.
All right, here we go. It's that time.
We got one from No Outlet over on Twitter. Out of all major pro sports, which athletes are most athletic?
I'm going to go with UFC fighters.
Really? Most athletic.
I just think that they're the most rounded athletes, from obviously cardio to functionality, movement, strength, power, explosiveness. I just think you got to endurance. I mean, I think they cover all the bases, at least the way I see it. But
well, I see what you're saying. If you say athlete to me, I'm thinking
team,
like sports, like who. Like an athlete, like Kimmo Tiiminen, like people don't like this guy's like really good at soccer.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Really good at basketball, like really good at hockey, obviously. Like Matt Reed, one of the best golfers I've ever seen, soccer player. Okay. That's what when you said athlete, that's what I meant. Like which sport? I know what you're saying. And
what sport is
like they're the most athletic.
Is that the question?
Is that the what he was saying? Okay, yeah. I would agree with that. Like they're probably the best athletes, but if I was gonna answer that, I would say like I don't know. Like it's easy for me to say, but I think hockey players, the ones that I've seen,
well-rounded
athlete. Yeah, like. But, yeah. I mean, that's could probably be in any sport too.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure like, those guys. So, but can. I like your answer, so let's go with that because that's a good answer.
We got one from DMBTour05 over on Twitter. I know it's preseason, but does the Flyer start concern you? Lack of offense and defense.
Well, it is preseason. You're getting young guys in there to get their looks, and I don't know. I mean, you'd like to score more than one goal in two games, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to say I'm concerned right now. The start in Jersey, like we talked about earlier, was a little, I mean, but again, you got a lot of kids playing and nerves. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I'm not sure if concern is the word. I think it's just the reality of the Flyers. We talked about this at the end of last year going into the off season. Like, you know, they haven't replaced some of these goals. You know, the back end is, I say, weakened with, you know, some of this movement.
Yeah.
And it's kind of twofold. I think when you don't have guys that can move the puck up, you know, and carry the puck out of situations and move the puck up to the forwards, you're gonna lack defense and you're gonna lack offense, right? So it's right. Like a little bit of a double whammy. So they haven't improved the offense and they've weakened the defense. But I think this is the reality of the Flyers this year, is they're gonna have to find ways to defend better and keep these games tight. And then, you know, say score by committee. Like they're not gonna score a lot of goals, I don't think. But if you keep it tight and play well defensively, you're going to generate a little more offense and just going to have to play that real that really stingy game, I think, to squeeze games out. At least that's the way I see it. I just don't think that they've improved enough offensively, and certainly not on the back end. So, yeah, but concerning, I think it's just the reality. You know, I think, again, it's hard to evaluate in preseason because you got, you know, mixed lineups, both teams. You know, it's loose, looser, you know, the structure there is not quite there. But I think what you saw in those two games is maybe not quite to that extent. You know, one goal in two games, they're going to score more.
Right.
But they're not going to score a lot, you know, so they're going to have to keep the goals against really, really low. That's the way I see it.
You're also, whether you liked either one of them or not, which Torch really didn't, taking Provorov out of your lineup.
Right.
And Tony D'Angelo.
Well, that's it.
Love him or hate him, that's a lot
to
lose on your back end.
Yeah,
and they're aware of that, obviously. They know that. But you lost a lot of minutes there.
A lot of minutes,
two guys that went – arguably, they were 1 and 2. They were your 1 and 2.
Yeah,
D-men. So.
And to that point is those guys, you know, can we get the puck out and skate the puck out of, you know, out of trouble, and, you know, move the puck up and advance the puck, right? So even if the forwards aren't as offensive as we'd like them to be, or, you know, can score as much, at least they're playing away from their net.
Yes.
But, you know, it's playing in and around your net and in your zone more than you should drains a team, as you know. It's exhausting. It is. But I think, you know, it's still early. I think the organization's very well aware of the holes. You know, guys are going to have to take on larger roles and just play tighter. I mean, play harder. I mean, it's the reality.
Play tight, yeah.
So, good question.
Yes.
Ike Barrows over on Twitter wants to know, Riley, did you ever fight Zach Fitzgerald in the AHL? How was it being his coach in Adirondack? He was so cool with the fans.
I never fought Fitzy, but as you alluded to, one of the greatest guys you'll ever have in the locker room. I mean, he reminded me so much of myself. Like, he would fight anybody.
He would.
And want to do it again. He'd get his ass beat and get back out there and do it all over again. Like, as if it was, like, he was, like, unfazed by it, and smile on his face, chirping, having fun. Like, looking at me, how was that? You know, like, just such a good guy, you know, just good guy in the locker room. You know, great guy with fans. I mean, you talk about the best guy with fans, like, just give his shirt off his back to anybody.
Yeah.
Never fought the guy. Certainly would have if I had played against him, I'm sure. But talk about a gamer, man. Like,
he was a game.
Gamer. Anybody, anytime, anywhere.
I enjoyed him at camp, man. Yeah, just talking to him. Like,
man,
what? Just happy. Yeah, just
little sounds you'd make.
Yeah, make sounds. He was just so happy and happy to be there.
Oh, yeah. So grateful. Yes. And just like, yeah. He's exactly, guy. As a coach, he, like, if you could just clone his character, maybe weave in a little more skill.
He would tell you that too.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, but nonetheless, like, if you can clone the character and just spread that amongst every player, I mean, that'd be a coach's dream. But yeah, one of the best guys you'll meet in hockey, I think.
He was awesome.
Yep.
I got one more.
All right.
This is a question from me. One of our camera operators, Debo, the other night made an asinine question, in my opinion, or I shouldn't say a question, but a statement, where he said that Bo Horvat was better than Claude Giroux. Whoa. I would like to know your guys' thoughts on that.
He did say that, Debo.
As a joke, kind of.
As a Bo. Joke. Oh, Bo. Bo don't know.
Bo don't know.
Not that Bo.
I like Bo, but not that much.
I don't like Bo that much, Debo.
He's a great player. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, he is. I'm not sure. I'm not sure he's G status, but
I don't think he's quite.
He will be eventually.
Yeah.
What?
Give him a couple years. How many more years?
Two
more years? All right.
How old is he?
I don't know, what, 26, 27?
He's going to be G?
We'll see.
G was G at like 23.
Yeah, G was G at 22, 23. Stanley Cup Finals, yeah. G.
Yeah,
it takes time.
It does.
You're right.
It's a process.
He's running out of it, so you better hurry up. Good question, baller.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think that's a wrap.
Is that a wrap?
Oh, yeah. 127.
In the books.
In the books.
Don't forget to tell him to like and subscribe on YouTube.
You tell him.
I just did.
Like and subscribe. Check us out next week for episode 128. Until then, Stay safe, knuckleheads.
See ya.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.